Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Can I smoke in here? Can I smoke? Can I not smoke in here? These guys don't care.
Just so you know, this is Gavin's fuck up, because I had this correct and he modified it.
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah, recorded live in the Jeanette D. Moses Memorial Studio. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On today's episode, we'll be going into the audio files, finding out about fall beers from Squatters and Wasatch, and we'll be going into the Pickle Factory. Audio Files is a 30-minute music and documentary show from Provo, Utah that started in April of 2012, featuring segments about local bands such as Joshua James, Paper Routes, and Imagine Dragons. It then premiered on BYU TV this year as a full-fledged show in the station's lineup. Slug writer Steve Richardson recently sat down with director Matt Eastland and show producer and Velour venue owner Corey Fox, along with Jared Shores.
So can you guys just tell me like a little bit about Audio Files? What is the goal with it and like how do you portray it?
There's not, in my mind, and this is to be edited by Matt, hopefully you can fix my screw-ups. But the goal, there isn't, I'd say, a goal for Audio Files per se, but I think each of us kind of have a collective goal in general of giving exposure to deserving artists to, and at the same time broadening the demographic and audience appeal of BYU TV, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity for BYU TV to kind of walk a new trail, if you will, as far as genre, as far as demographic. You've probably turned on BYU TV enough to know that you might not find anything on BYU TV you want to watch, per se.
Yeah.
As a viewer yourself. And I think that could be said of a lot of people of the ages between 16 to 25 or 30. There might be a couple specials here and there that I think would appeal, but Audio Files more specifically can do that. And it's a good fit for BYU TV because it's something that we as a network also love. And it's not something that is a force fit for us, like we're trying to get those viewers per se, but it's something that is who we are to begin with. And we like the passion that these up-and-coming artists have, the sacrifice that they give, the music that they create. And that's the complicated answer of what our goal is for the show.
Yeah, no, I think that a lot of people who watch Audio Files are surprised by the show. I don't know, I love working with bands, and you know, I've done video for like 10 years, and my favorite thing is to do video with bands, and it's just so much fun to shoot performance pieces, to interview bands, to find out, you know, why they do what they do. Yeah, and Audio Files is just the vehicle to show people why these artists sacrifice what they do to work in the music industry.
Hey, you say surprise, you mean like surprise it's on BYU TV, or just surprise about the show? And
yeah, I think that surprise that it's on BYU TV.
I think it's also a surprise that there's no other TV shows out there like this that are so real, very raw, and intimate, where you don't get such a personal look into an artist. And what is it like to play in Seattle and grow up in this small, you know, little house and learn to play guitar in this front steps and kind of be there with, you know, these artists and watch them kind of relive this process and see where they are now and how all you really know of, you know, these artists is where they are, but you don't know where they came. And that's really, I think, where a lot of the love and interest really lies in these musicians.
It's like going back in their backstory a little bit.
Yeah, and more specific, you know, I think of Damian Dorado, that episode that they aired not too long ago. I've always kind of been a fan of his music, but, you know, kind of hearing his whole life story and how he learned to play guitar and the different musicians he lived with, from David Bazan to members of Fleet Foxes, and it just kind of enriches his story in my eyes that now I'm like, I don't just hear his song now, but I hear the history that comes with it. And I think, oh, you know, he wrote that right here, and I just can visualize who he is and his passion, and now it means more to me because it's a stronger connection.
What other kind of shows kind of influenced you guys? Are you just trying to find out your own thing?
part of it was, you know, I look at all the different music shows that are on TV right now, and I don't like any of them. Like, every music show is either a contest show or some, like, reality-based show. And even, like, the Cribs and some of the shows on MTV that introduce us to artists and are supposed to be showing us their real life are totally produced, and they're not real. And we wanted to basically make the music show that we wish was on TV. And so it's really fun. Like, we get to make the show that we would potentially watch if it had already been on TV.
What's funny, early on when we were approached, we actually one night sat here in the office and was like, well, let's kind of look and see what else is out there and get some ideas, and just realize there isn't anything out there to get the ideas from. So kind of had to create it from scratch.
Yeah, it totally seems like it's an original idea, original looking show. I was wondering too, like, if you guys had seen anyone. That's why I asked, because
no, we tried though. Yeah. We're hoping we can rip off some ideas.
What's your balance between local and more national acts for the audiophiles? Because Occidental Saloon was like all local. Audiophiles seems like you've kind of done mostly national acts.
Yeah, I mean, the idea was that we just wanted to do the biggest and best bands from around the country, and you know, that's still our goal. You'd notice some local acts in season one, you know, like Imagine Dragons, Neon Trees, Joshua James. You know, they are great acts in our opinion on a national level. We're also buddies with those guys, and so it's easy for us to open that door, and especially in a first season, you know, you use the contacts you have first.
Yeah.
You know, we know those guys. We would have probably done episodes on them either way, but we know them, and so that made it even easier.
Yeah, it was a nice way that just low-hanging fruit that was high quality at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Imagine Dragons couldn't be getting bigger than what they are, and Neon Trees. I was in Denver the other day, and I went into three different stores, and I swear I heard their song every time.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Everywhere. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, Joshua James, when he releases his new album, is just going to explode even more
than the
popularity that he has.
Yeah, they all seem like the local artists that are kind of like hitting the national scene as well anyway.
Totally.
Yeah, totally.
So, like, is this show's not really like a platform to get the local guys noticed like the way Occidental Saloon
can see? No, that's not, I mean, that's not the goal of the show. I mean, that may be a byproduct. But yeah, I mean, the you know, all of the bands we have that we're lining up for later this year, Seattle, New York City, Los Angeles, so we'll be doing a lot of traveling.
Yeah, cool.
On
the other hand, though, it's really cool to have the artists from here in the same list, on the same roster as these national caliber bands. Because this show is playing all over the country. It's actually put, I mean, they are on that same level. Like you said, Imagine Dragons, number one on iTunes right now. It's still cool to see these bands that have earned it, the national respect, in the same category as these other national, you know, national caliber bands.
But yeah, it's funny. I mean, when you look at it on Billboard or iTunes, on that level, the two biggest bands we've worked with are Provo-based bands.
Yeah.
Imagine Dragons and Neon Trees. Yeah. It's kind of ironic.
What are your favorite parts from the show? Like any parts you did that you were really excited about, or anything that stands out?
Yeah, I mean, I loved traveling to Southern Utah with Joshua James, hiking in the mountains like with his goats and his wife. That was a really fun episode, and Josh is a friend and a good guy, so that was a lot of fun. Going up to Seattle, Jared mentioned this a little bit, but Damian Gerardo's house where he lived with guys in like Sunny Day Real Estate, Fleet Foxes, Pedro the Lion. You know, we went into this old broken house and he played the very first song he ever wrote in that house, and then the next day they tore it down. And so it was just like a really cool thing to be a part of, and like Damian himself was really glad that he was involved and that we did it and captured that moment. But it was really cool going to this old broken house when he played, you know, this really intimate song by candlelight because there was no electricity. And
it's already abandoned.
Yeah, it was already abandoned. That was a really cool
thing. It
wasn't
known that it was going to be torn down the next day. It's
They had no idea.
He had the idea, it would be cool to go in there and play the songs, and then, yeah, just found out the next day it was tore down, and that's definitely my favorite moment so far on the episodes, is that experience of Damien in the house. He ends the song. It didn't totally make it into the episode, but he ended it with, yeah, the first song he ever wrote in this house and the last one ever performed in it. So
that's crazy, the timing.
That's so cool.
Imagine Dragons played a song out in the desert outside of Vegas. That was cool. We did a lot of the interviews for the Neon Trees episode backstage at Jay Leno. That was kind of cool, even though in the episode you don't know that.
Yeah.
But that's where, just because that's the lifestyle they're living right now, it's basically the only downtime we could catch with them.
Yeah.
Were these few hours backstage.
Also, I think that the acoustic performance of Tyler.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
The hotel room story that's in the episode. I mean, I know them really well, and I'm friends with them, and I see that side of them. But I think the general public sees them as this larger-than-life, glammy band on stage, and a lot of times you don't get to see the intimate side of them. And I think that was really fun with that episode, to show that kind of side, and show him playing an acoustic guitar. That's one of my favorite ones, too, I think.
You know, one of my favorite things, Jared was with me on this one, when we landed in Duluth, Minnesota, we went up to Alan Sparhawk's house, the lead singer of Low. We got to his house, I think, about 30 minutes before him, and he kind of pulled up in this van and just had us hop in with him. And he said, I'll drive you guys down by the lake. And, you know, we just instantly started telling us stories and, you know, being really hospitable to us. And out of nowhere, he kind of pulls off the side of the road, takes his guitar out of the back of the van, and walks across the street. So we just keep the cameras rolling and follow him over. And there's this, someone had, like, taken this junky old toddler bed and had it out on their lawn and had a sign on it that said, you know, free bed or free toddler bed or something. And Alan just walked over and sat down and played Death of a Salesman, which is like my favorite Low song. That was just really fun, just like capturing that moment that was entirely unproduced, totally spontaneous. I don't know, that was one of my favorite moments. Just like seeing Alan pick up his guitar, sit down on this random bed, and play a song out on the street.
Yeah, and I'm with you there, and I think for me it's just it's the small moments of just seeing artists just be themselves that you never really see when they're just, this is their normal life, and it's just really cool to just be around them during that, you know, walking through, you know, Alan and his wife's house and just watching how they interact with their kids, just kind of, just feel like you shouldn't be there. It feels so sneaky in a way, but they're welcoming you in, and just, it's really kind of cool to see that.
That was cool. That same night at Alan's house, you know, he was showing us his old reel-to-reel recorders and all of his old amps and everything. It was really cool, because all of them had stories where he pointed that one, and yeah, that's how there we was, recorded our first album.
Yeah, that's where we recorded the Christmas album on this thing, and it's like, what?
Yeah,
it's crazy. Things in perspective.
Right.
So like way too much material to actually use for the episode.
Oh, always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many good stories that just don't make the cut.
And it definitely has like a level of intimacy that you can't really see anywhere else.
Yeah.
Audiophiles can be seen on BYU TV every Thursday night at 5 p.m. To find out more about the show and to watch previous episodes, check them out online at audiophiles.com. Don't forget the hyphen. That's audio-files.com. Synthesis is a hip-hop duo from Salt Lake City and Minneapolis. MCs Faust and Fingas formed the project in 2005, shortly before Fingas moved to Minnesota to become a production specialist. Composing music via email, this month, the duo released their fourth full-length album, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, as a digital download. From that album, here's Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. Just ain't gonna cut it. Hate it or love it, gotta grab the rung above it. It ain't what we do, it's how we do it. Synthesis, you better get used to it. And the minute you do, we gonna flip it. Kick it so slick, don't blame me, hard to grip it. Just try to keep up, we done did it. If you don't know now, you know to get with it. It ain't a passion or a hobby, it's a sickness. We terminal live till the finish. They call me doc for putting on a clinic. Headhunting each and every cynic. You never heard a duo with a product like we selling. If Faust's Tim Burton and Fingas is Danny Elfman. Spitting seeds straight to the melon. It ain't meningitis, it got your brain swelling. I get around like Magellan.
yelling, yelling at the moon. Atmospheres are felling, no telling what the future will hold. Until we understand what the past had to teach, there's nothing you can get that ain't sold, and nothing gets stolen without a reach. So what I'm here to preach is split second timing. I relate to Chris Sharma, rock bottom and climbing. What can I say? These games we play almost only counts in horseshoes and in grenades. What can I say? These games we play almost only counts in horseshoes and in grenades. I came to put the city on the map with this gritty indie rap. Ain't looking for no pity ridden tap. Statue upon a national attack, not for cash, but the bat on the road to crash. Missionary stole the title, sheep herders. So I'm gathering together an army of shepherds. We're getting better every reckon and we know it. So we'll continue making them and playing shows to show it. Concept poets almost as basic. Crush it so you know we catch anything we chasing. Waiting on Jason for the fingers licks. From the genesis of product to the future Freddy Krueger flicks. Get physical, cannons loaded, no chance to miss the boat. Not vanishing into the dark, pick the game apart, shed some light on the true spirit of urban art.
That was Synthesis with Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, the title track off their recent album. To download the album for just $5, check out their shop on synthesis.bandcamp.com. For more info on the band, visit them online at facebook.com/synthesis. How do you spell synthesis? S-I-N-T-H-E-S-I-S. I am pleased to be joined right now by John Lee. He's the head brewer of the Utah Brewers Co-op, which is a Wasatch and Squatters brew here locally. And also, of course, nationally, you can get a lot of these beers in your better liquor stores and beer outlets all across the country. And you guys are on tap some places too, right?
We are, yeah. We do, obviously, full tap and all throughout Utah. And then we do some of the full-strength beers that, unfortunately, we can't sell here in Utah are on tap in other locations. Things like the IPA, Devastator, Hop Rising, White Label.
Speaking of the Devastator, last time I spoke to you, we were at the brewery and we were talking about your Devastator race car. I was able to write an article about it a few years ago. How's it going racing your Miata?
Racing, doing quite well this season. All outings showing up, taking first place every single event they showed up at. Only a few minor wrinkles on the side of the car. Nothing that a hammer can't bang out, but doing quite well and having fun with it still.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you're still keeping up on that. It's really cool that the fact that you do all this stuff with beer and you also have time to race and, you know, juggle all that. It must be hard sometimes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's hard to find the time, but it's one of those things, one of those loves that just kind of make it happen.
And you're busy crafting these beers year-round, of course, but today you've brought us a sampling of some of your more seasonal beverages, so we can talk a little bit about that. Actually, do you have that,
sure.
You have that can opener there?
Sure.
Oh, great. That's the greatest audio I've heard here in a while. Thank you. This is the Bobsled American Brown Ale, which supposedly goes down easy with roasted malt undertones. And how would you describe this?
I would definitely put that the roasted malt as a nice component to this particular brew. We do put some a healthy amount of hops that go into this, but the kind of hop that we use is it's not a knock you on the head type of hop that you'd associate with some of the IPAs and pale ales. This is a pretty hoppy beer, but the malt flavor is something we try to really focus on in the coming up here in this fall season, because it's something that tends to be a little bit more tasty as the weather turns. But I would definitely say it does have a kind of a caramely, almost a, kind of like a caramel malt sweetness.
That's a good way to describe it. I was looking for the word for it.
Uh-huh.
And you know all the words for it.
I do, yeah. And we also use a little bit of chocolate malt in here too, that you'll notice there'll be some kind of a, sometimes people associate the chocolate malt with a coffee type flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar flavors that you might taste sometimes in porters and stouts, but a little bit more subdued in the brown ale.
Yeah, and this uses as, what kind of hops?
We use Willamette. It's grown up in the northern part of the country there in the Yakima Valley in Yakima, Washington. Yeah, quite a acidic. It's not a knock you on the head type of a hop, but still fruity. Very nice presence in the finished beer.
Now, I've never really done a beer tasting per se. Let's say, hypothetically, I have a beer in my hand.
For instance,
if I have a bobsled American brown ale, 12 fluid ounces from Wasatch. Great label, by the way.
Right.
Let's say I have one in my hand and I'm going to drink it after I put it in my mouth. Please keep this classy, everyone out there. After I put this in my mouth, what should I do?
For beer tasting, a lot of times, you know, so like in wine tasters, oftentimes they'll swish around their mouth and try to get a full palate and then hold on to it and then maybe drink it down. And professional tasting is they actually spit it out. But with beer, you want to drink it quite quickly. So, I mean, not like pound it, but you do want to, you know, get it in your mouth and then drink it down, because it's there's some things that are up front in the profile, in your flavor profile, that you'll taste immediately. Carbonation is one of the strong things that you get right away. You get a nice sparkle on your tongue. As it passes over your tongue, down your throat, you're going to get the caramely, malty flavor is going to stand out a little bit more. And then you're often left at the tail end of the tasting with a little bit of that hot flavor and the bitterness. You get a little bit more of the bitterness kind of lingers back, kind of on the back side of your tongue. And that's where some of the craft comes in with what we like to do, because we want to see kind of all three of those stages really blend together nicely. And now if we have this in a glass, there's a fourth stage that is very important, and it's the appearance and the aroma. And so as you're bringing the glass up to your mouth, you're going to smell, and so the aroma is going to be an important part of the tasting as well. So,
and it looks brown, but you know, it could be the bottle.
Brown and bubbly.
It does say brown ale though.
All right.
We don't have a glass. Next time.
All right, next time.
Next time. And thanks, by the way, for explaining that.
Sure.
And we've got another one of your seasonal brews in hand here. Do you mind cracking this?
Certainly.
Pumpkin? Delightful. All right, I'm going to try to do everything you just said, and I'll give you my impressions. It's got this nice... It's not in a glass, so I'm seeing this differently than you might. There's the fourth. On this one, you're seeing, like, some really cold... sort of, what's a fog coming out of here?
Yeah, that's actually just a reaction with some of the CO2 that's up in the headspace air as it interacts and...
It looks beautiful, though. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
There you go.
Well, you guys did it again. I've had this before.
Mm-hmm.
It's as good as it was. I'm going to tell you what it tastes like to me,
okay,
if I may. It tastes like pumpkin.
Fantastic. It's a pumpkin ale. That's what we kind of wanted to have. So.
Now, you guys brew this with your regular brewery tricks and whatnot, but you also have real pumpkin in here. How does that work?
We do. We actually have a pumpkin puree that we throw, we put in right in the boil while we're boiling the hops and trying to get the sugars coalesced into what we like to ferment. We do put in, it's close to 100, 150 pounds of pumpkin puree, maybe a little bit more. Sorry, my math might be a little bit off. But so what we see is it goes in the kettle, it boils along with the hops, and it's almost like a soup where you're kind of extracting, you're getting that pumpkin flavor out into the end of the piece, and then at the end of that boil, we will strain that out and then send just the, it's essentially just kind of like a pumpkin soup, if you will. But along with that, so the pumpkin goes in the kettle, but we also put in the spices. There's some spices that go along with the kettle. We've got some cinnamon, some ginger, and some allspice, and then vanilla. And just to make sure that we get that spice just right, we do an additional spice addition directly in the fermenter as soon as fermentation is complete to give it a little bit more pop, a little bit more sparkle. And so we're going for this pumpkin ale. We want to see is a kind of a nice creamy body. So maybe what you're tasting over what you had here on the bobsled, this one should be a little bit more full on your tongue, and you have a little bit more mouthfeel.
Yeah.
And so give you a little bit more presence. And then, you know, again, obviously coming into this Halloween, Thanksgiving season, pumpkin and pumpkin flavoring is very popular and very big.
It's one of my favorite flavors. I make a pumpkin pie every year. I roast it myself, you know, do the whole bit. Not from a can, John. That's not my style.
Straight from the gourd.
Yeah, exactly. And, very nice. And you guys have that same attention to spices. If anybody knows pumpkin pie, you got to put the right spices in it. And you guys are doing that with the beer, basically replicating some sort of pumpkin dessert in the beer format, which is amazing.
Yeah.
If you've never had a pumpkin-flavored beer like this before, definitely do it. Although I wouldn't really say it's flavored, right? You actually brew it with these spices.
We brew it with the pumpkin, with the spices, and throw it all in. And a point of pride for us is that we this still tastes like a beer. It's not overly sweet. It's not something that you're going to push away and then say, it's kind of leaning towards too heavy towards that pie side. It still really tastes like a good beer, but it just happens to also have that pumpkin and pumpkin pie type characteristic to it.
Yeah, I've had those, you know, those national beers before that are more like flavored and they add things to them, but this is legit. It tastes like beer, but just pumpkin.
Very nice. Thank you.
It's really good. Yeah, good job on that one. And, I see this guy staring at me right now.
That's an evil one.
You gave me this the last time I took a trial of your, or a tour rather, of your brewery, and it was a trial to drink, let's say that, but it was well worth it. It got me more acquainted with this sort of Russian style stout that was really good. Will you talk a little bit about the Outer Darkness and pop this open for me, please?
Sure. This is a monster to drink.
Yeah, well, I'm going to give it a shot. This podcast is going to be one of the best I've ever done.
All right.
That's for sure. And I want to describe the bottle. It's not a regular size beer bottle. It is a pint and 9 fluid ounces. It looks closer to a wine bottle than, you know, others you might find. Is there a technical name for this kind of bottle in the beer?
Sometimes we call them either 750 or 25-ounce bottle, but there's really no technical name to it. It's just a big-ass beer bottle.
It's a big...
If you want to break it down.
And it's got the Demon Eyes on it. There's actual Demon Eyes, and it's a reserve series. It's a special brew of yours. As I taste this and get used to it a little bit, will you tell us the brewing process involved in this sort of beer?
The Outer Darkness is a, like I said, a Russian Imperial Stout, a little bit over 10% alcohol by volume, and it is a monster. Anybody that has very much experience with stouts are gonna know. But these Russian Imperials are kind of the granddaddies of all stouts. They're very labor intensive to make. We use a ton of different, not a ton, but we use quite a few different malts to it. One of the malt we use is lends itself a little bit of a toffee characteristic to it. The roasted barley that's in here is also really strong. As I mentioned earlier with the brown, you can have some coffee-like flavors associated with some of these dark roasted malts, and you're going to get that from this roasted barley. But we also, in addition to the high presence of the sweet malts that we use in this, we also throw in molasses. We do about 200 pounds of molasses goes also into the kettle. Each particular brew that we do, we take 3 brews to fill up 1 fermenter, so we're using about 600 pounds of molasses to run into this. So you get that molasses flavor. The molasses completely ferments out, but you get a little bit more depth of character along with that.
Yeah, this.
And we've also got some licorice root that we put in, so there's a little bit of an anise-type flavor. Very bitter, too. These are these Outer Darknesses, and this Russian Imperial-type style is a very bitter, very hoppy beer. But you wouldn't know it because of all the other flavors that you've got going on with that. So, and then the final step is post-fermentation. We will move this over to another fermenter and let it sit on oak. We use a medium toast American oak and a French oak that stay in, that we rest in this for a couple weeks to get some of that oak and wood flavor to come in, sometimes associated with a vanilla type characteristic.
I've got a question about the wood in beer process.
Sure.
What do you do? Do you reuse that wood, or do you just use it the one time? How does that work?
Use it, for this particular brew, we just use it the one time.
Yeah, that's pretty
and,
amazing.
What we use on this one is some oak spirals, and so it maximizes. So it's oak that's cut, and it maximizes the contact between the beer. And we just tie it off. We rest it inside the fermenter, get our contact through there.
And if you're a beer fan and you like complex beers, especially Imperial Stouts, this is the way to go, because It's pretty amazing. It's already hit me a little bit here. It's got the glowing eyes on it, so it's perfect for Halloween as well. If you're looking for something that may encourage you to listen to metal music, perhaps, this is it. Or if you're a well-rounded gentleman or lady in general, you would want to try this. Last time I was at your brewery, you guys were doing some new installations of tanks. Will you tell us a little bit about the progress you folks have made in the last few years? Because it's pretty impressive going in there. It's huge. It's a big full-scale operation you have in there. It's really impressive.
Yeah, we've made some really good. I'm trying to remember how many we put in since last time you visited, but wow. I think we put in an additional 3 or 4 fermenters, increased our capacity. So that our fermentation capacity could easily take us up to about 55 to 60,000 barrels a year. Right now we're humming along at about 45, and which is a good bump for us.
Oh yeah.
We've also thrown in some additional bright beer tanks. The bright tanks are where we hold the finished beer prior to packaging. We had the bottling line was up and running, I believe, when you visited.
Yeah.
And since that time, we've also added a new kegging line, a new kegging operation. Before, we had 2 small machines that one guy was running, really breaking his back on. And we've installed a new keg line that he can just take them, run them on, goes through one process, cleans them, cleans the outside, cleans the inside, sanitizes them, fills them with beer, and they come off. And we got this really cool vacuum thing that sucks on, can pick up a 185-pound keg with one hand. It's kind of cool to see, but
if anyone has the opportunity to take a tour of a brewery ever, you were the first person I think to take me on a tour of a brewery that size. It's so cool to watch it and the smells, and you get to see the hops, you know, sitting there ready to go in and everything ready. It's just an amazing thing to watch.
For the folks at home, we do offer tours every Friday at 3:00. Everybody's welcome. Just show on up around 3:00, and we're happy to show you around.
You also do some tastings every once in a while too, right?
We do some private tastings. Unfortunately, with the way that the Utah laws are written, we can't do the public tastings like we used to years ago. It'd be nice to see if that could change. We'd be all for it, but for now, it's private tastings or some one-on-one. If you happen to know a brewer, sit down and can drink with them. Okay, you through it.
Yeah, I got lucky today. I definitely recognize that. You have another seasonal brew coming out. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about one of my favorites of yours?
Sure, we have the Winterfest. It's one of our Wasatch brands, the Wasatch Winterfest. And this is one that we all really, really enjoy, the brewers. This is something that we really look forward to every year. What it was, I'm having a hard time remembering exactly when we did. I want to say 5, maybe 6 years ago is when we came out with the first one of these. We've all been big fans of the Sierra Nevada Celebration and other beers of that ilk for many, many years. And we've always really wanted to try our hand at doing something similar to that. While we didn't knock it off entirely, we kind of took that in the same vein. And so the Winterfest is another very malt-driven beer. The caramel malt flavors is much more enhanced in that beer. The overall body is also a lot bigger. But one thing that really stands out is the hop characteristic that we're using in this. And it is a bit more bitter, comes in about 55 IBUs. The aroma and the flavor profile of the hops that we use on that are sometimes reminiscent of a pine. Pine flavor. There's another one of the hops that has also been noted out as kind of a berry-like, almost strawberry. And so like there's this strawberry combined with the pine and goes along with the caramel malt sweetness. That's they all really work well together. And it's just a fantastic wintertime fall beer.
Yeah, it sounds delicious. When is that going to be hitting the shelves?
That is going to be, first bottling run is going to be on September 18th.
Great, so around the time this airs, people will be able to go get it in the stores.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, first place, the beer store there on Third West is the first place all these become available. And then it'll start filtering out into the liquor system.
And I'd recommend to visit your store there, the brewery you folks have, because it's got everything you folks make, and it's amazing.
It's cold and very fresh.
Exactly, it's as fresh as it gets.
It's the most recent bottling of everything that we've always done. Sometimes you can get the bottle run that was done that day, and it'll say so right there on the shoulder of the bottle, the born on date. And sometimes, you can be walking out with something that was packaged that morning.
That's a really great feeling, and I'm glad to have experienced all these different brews. Thanks for your hard work making our beer scene better, and thanks for stopping by, John.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Great to see you again. Yeah. For more information about John Lee, of course, you can read the aforementioned article I did on him in a past slug. Just search Devastator Race Car, and you can find out about his racing and his endeavors in the beer brewing world. Thanks again, John.
You betcha. Thanks for having me.
We'd also like to remind you to drink responsibly and drive responsibly as well.
Tell Wally I went easy when I shot you up and down. You'll never beat another.
It's time once again for our weekly daily calendar rundown with Esther Moronio. And we're going to start off the week with Tuesday. Are you excited, by the way?
Oh, I am so excited for Tuesday.
It's a really good week.
Yeah, so I am stoked for this week, mostly because it starts with Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti. Just so you guys know, there is a feature in our September issue on Ariel Pink. And I didn't know much about this band until I read a little bit about them and talked to Cody Hudson, who was the author of this piece. And apparently, at Coachella this summer, Ariel Pink's band played while he had his back to the audience the whole time because he was mad that the sound wasn't perfect and he didn't sing at all.
So rock star, isn't it?
Yeah, so, and apparently a lot of his shows are like super dramatic, so we'll be in for a surprise. Maybe he'll storm off the stage.
Fingers crossed that won't happen though.
Yeah.
I'm sure the sound will be excellent. The sound at Urban is great when it's dialed in.
Should be an interesting show regardless. So that Tuesday, Alex Springer is also celebrating his birthday. Happy birthday, Alex! And Alex Springer is one of our writers. He covers a lot of different things. Music, video games, movies. He's awesome.
All around A-plus guy.
Yeah.
And there's another birthday of an Alex this week as well. Did
you
know that?
Yeah. On Wednesday, another one of our Alexes on staff is celebrating a birthday. Alexander Ortega, he's our junior editor, and he's pretty all right, I would say. Happy birthday, Alex.
You've got my vote of A-plus as well, Alex. Just to let you know that. And Thursday, my favorite event, at least entitled event, in a long while, Grammar Phobia. It's a workshop at the SLCC Community Writing Center, which is at the library. Have you ever been there before?
No, but I was looking at the list of workshops that they host, and I'm thinking that I need to go to the Zombie Apocalypse Guide workshop that they're hosting.
Wow, I didn't even know they did that.
Yeah, it sounds pretty awesome. And they're only $10, and this specific workshop is so that you can learn more about punctuation and grammar, which I know it sounds super boring, but people need to know this stuff.
I think everyone in America should take a remedial grammar class, comma, seriously.
Yes, I think so too. As a copy editor, it's one of my biggest pet peeves.
I worked with the SLCC Community Writing Center doing some volunteering. It's a really good organization, and they get my vote for whatever that's worth. And we've got another birthday. And Friday, September 28th, three in a row. Are you ready for this one?
Kia McGinnis is celebrating her birthday. She is our office intern. She's been with us for forever, and she is also a writer and contributes to the podcast every once in a while. So happy birthday, Kia.
And Friday, September 28th, if you're going to Area 51 on any particular day, you'd want it to be during Fetish Night, which is rubber, latex, and PVC. And that's Friday the 28th.
And I actually added this one on here because I thought it was up your alley. And I actually had a question for you about this, JP.
Go for it.
What is it that you fetishize about PVC pipes?
What do people... I think you misunderstand what PVC in this case is.
Oh, what
PVC is PVC? It's just the name in general for a kind of plastic, so they make clothing out of it. They're not walking around with PVC pipes. That's hilarious. Thank you, Esther. Brought a smile to my face. I guess you can have sex with a tube? Is that what you were thinking? I turned one into a potato shooter once when I was younger. That's all I got on PVC.
September 29th, we want to wish a happy birthday to Michelle Stark. She is the Crawford City Exhibition Manager and helps out year-round to put the festival together. On Sunday, September 30th, the Geek Show Movie Night at Broovies, which happens the last Sunday of every month. And it also happens to be Shannon Barson's birthday, who is one of the Geek Show DJs, organizers, one of the geeks.
Panelists, he's one of the geeks. And he's chosen for this night two movies. They do a doubleheader every time they do a Geek Show movie night. Pootie Tang and Black Dynamite, two of my favorites in the genre of semi-blaxploitation films. You have to see them to believe them. They're hilarious.
I love Louis C.K., but I have never seen Pootie Tang.
Yeah, it's interesting compared to other work he's done. I think the studio had a bigger hand in it, but the concept is funny. And Chris Rock is great, you know.
I love Chris Rock.
And I'm going to get my medal on Monday, October 1st. Are you?
Yeah.
No, you're not. I'm not either. I would see Rob Zombie, but not Marilyn Manson. Both of those guys are going to be at the USANA Amphitheater on October 1st.
Did you know that Marilyn Manson was banned from Salt Lake in 1994 for ripping up a Book of Mormon on stage?
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that. I do like him for that. Besides that, I'm not a big fan of whatever kind of music it is he makes.
Yeah, me neither. Still, though, should be an interesting show.
Rob Zombie always brings it, though. I'll stand up for Mr. Zombie. He's interesting. Also, speaking of directors, he's a good director.
I can't handle his movies.
Yeah, you probably can't, but they're okay.
What does that mean?
The Halloweens are good. Thank you so much, Esther, for giving us the event rundown. Now, will you please tell us where people can find out additional information about the daily calendar?
Yes, they can find it online at slugmag.com, where on our homepage, it's all listed right there. Or you can also download our iPhone app, and that actually has the latest episode, which you can download directly from there as well, and also our latest issue of the magazine. So there are various forms that the daily calendar is put out on.
Well, thank you for running down each one.
Well, you're my favorite host
so far. Thanks. Secret Abilities is an indie garage pop band from Salt Lake City that started in 2007 with David Ebeg, Tim Sessions, and Dave Todd under their original name. His secret ability is he can hit you from anywhere. The name was shortened before their EP release in 2008. Planet Earth is about to be recycled. The band just released their second EP with a different lineup, Decapitated, earlier this month. Here's Secret Abilities with Decapitated from their latest EP, Decapitated.
She decapitated me. Not even in the game, just like any other time. I pick a girl up at 8 and girl on the top of 9. We've been a couple friends, but I'm sure all of the facts. We started good and good, and yeah, I guess I'm good at that. So who am I gonna find out until a second to see? My baby, baby, she decapitated me.
Was Secret Abilities with Decapitated from their latest EP, Decapitated. The band's release show for the EP will take place at Kilby Court on September 28th with Baby Ghosts, Jaws, Danger Button, and Shit Shammers. The show is just $6 and it starts at 7. For more information on the group, visit them online at secretabilities.weebly.com. That's weebly.com. I'm currently joined right now by the SLC at Pickle Factory's Carly Meng and Hillary Barrett. Thank you for sitting down, ladies. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing quite well, sir.
And who wants to tell me what the Pickle Factory is for people that don't know?
So the Pickle Factory is a building in the Granary District, downtown Salt Lake. It's been artist studio space. A whole bunch of stuff's been in there in the past. My family acquired it a few years ago, and we've turned it into quite the venue and private studio space galore.
What we have going on at the Pickle Factory is seriously still in the making. As of now, what we've been doing is helping artists come do huge murals and burners on our outdoor ancient walls. And what we're trying to do is establish an artist collective. And the artist collective is going to mainly be happening in our indoor venue that we're opening up in the beginning of October. officially opening in the beginning of November. So that's kind of the whole idea there is a gallery, huge showing once a month to kick off an artist who is locally underrepresented, help them get their name out there, and throw a huge show.
And how does the Pickle Factory fit into the landscape of the Granary District in terms of like geography and function?
The Pickle Factory is kind of literally the heart, like at the heart of the Granary District. There's been, you know, a huge push for redevelopment, but not on like a buy up the land, tear down the buildings, and build strip malls. But, you know, people have been buying these properties up and making great use of the buildings that already exist there. You know, and they kind of make this big push that it's a district of makers. You know, no matter who's been there, people are making things, whether it's, you know, art studios or, you know, mechanic shops.
On a very local level, on a very grassroots level as well.
So we're tying in with that heavily and just kind of, you know, supporting the local art, doing local shows there with local musicians, local bands, local hip-hop artists, all the above.
In an effort at full disclosure, I have to let you know I live in the Granary District.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm well aware of the Pickle Factory. I've been attending events there maybe for the last decade or so. It's been in different incarnations over mm-hmm. the last few years. Mm-hmm. What makes this time a little bit different than the past, would you say?
You know, we're hitting a very young market, I think, that might be a little different than the past.
I think you just said I was old.
No, not at that. I mean, we're doing a big push to do all ages shows, which is hard in Salt Lake because you can go see a band or artist anywhere at any bar any night of the week in Salt Lake, but it's hard for young people to go when you're not 21 or when you don't have the money to go to a bar. And trying to keep our shows cheap, all of our shows are $5 and that's not going to change.
The local level is something else we're really trying to push. You know, Salt Lake has some incredible talent that just doesn't always get noticed. And I mean, there are a lot of other really beautiful things that people in Salt Lake are doing to get these artists noticed. You know, I think where we come in that's different from that area, it's that, you know, we're doing essentially a very similar thing that I know other people are doing out there.
Yeah.
We're doing it at the Granary District, and, you know, we're renting out this indoor venue, and we also have this outdoor venue. So in order for us to establish a different understanding, a different name, you know, we do things indoor, outdoor. We are really hoping to have an art garden in the back of the Pickle Factory where our amphitheater is. The art garden would be something pretty interactive. Like, there's a girl who wants to do cigarette butt art in the back of it. You know, just interesting, funky, just really different stuff.
I mean, we're taking this at a very, like, humble, light level. Like, we don't think we're the next.
Not trying to be the next Altair, not trying to be the next anything.
Just having fun and doing stuff for kids that want something to do and want somewhere to play or show their stuff at. So.
Yeah.
I recently was at an event there in the back, and I really appreciate the art that's on the walls there and some of the different artists that you've collected to paint up the area. Will you explain a little bit about who's been involved back there?
We've been very fortunate to know a lot of the, you know, really good Salt Lake underground, you know, graffiti community, kind of grown up with them, and got a really great friend, Paul, who's been helping us a lot with that, kind of gathering up artists. I know we've got some huge burners back there that are just beautiful and they take hours to do. We buy the paint for them, supply the paint, and they do them live at our shows. It's kind of...
Trying not to do live anymore because every other person with a Sharpie decides to tag everything.
But that's kind of the beauty of it too, just adding to the art. You know, it's just been great. We've had some big pieces. Everyone's local, so... It's cool.
It is, and the space inside looks a lot different than when I saw it last.
It is, yeah. Huge reconstruction. My dad...
Not even finished yet. Still very dangerous on the inside.
Yeah.
Literally falling through floors here.
My dad, Lou Barrett, he's been a huge property owner in downtown Salt Lake for a long time. He owned Decades and Wasatch Furniture, and it's just kind of been his lifelong passion is just buying these old buildings and kind of building studios and redesigning, and it's cool. So
people won't be falling through the floors for long.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not.
When we bought the building, all the floors were slanted because it actually used to be a pickle factory. And
so the pickle juice would go to one side.
The pickle juice would all... there's a drainage system in the building, so
wow.
All the floors were slanted that we've been trying to unslant. Just kidding.
And it's so old, it probably just starts slanting all
yeah, probably.
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, there are train tracks running through there still.
Yeah, there are. That's
they
amazing.
They go right up into the back where they used to load pickles.
It's such a cool part of the city. Thanks for your part in helping reinvigorate it. Right. So starting on the 24th of September, what do we have going on after that?
After the 24th, we've got the 28th is Indie Underground, which is a huge poet society event. And it's partnered with Off the Chain, which is they're doing a big weekend-long charity thing for
animal rights.
Mm-hmm. The 29th, we've got a big live and local show that we put on at the Pickle Factory. I know early September. Date's not booked yet, but there should be a Spell Talk and Max Payne.
You mean early October?
Yeah. We've got a lot of shows the weekend before. Yeah. We've got 3 shows the weekend, like 20th, 21st, and 22nd.
That's a welcome home party for like Grimbley and whatnot.
Mr.
So
Vanderbilt.
If you didn't go,
it's a huge art show on the 20th.
Yeah, we're in the future right now. You guys missed out on all those awesome shows.
And then Halloween weekend, we're having a huge parties all weekend at our new indoor venue that's going to be located 3 doors down from the Pickle Factory at the Narco building. It's going to be 3 nights of awesome, crazy local.
Hoping to get the final night as our official release party for the productions company and our indoor venue.
You mean the final night of October?
Yeah, 31st. So that's going to be just huge Halloween party kickoff for our venue and 2,000 square feet. We've got 20-foot high murals from Salt Lake graffiti artists, so it's going to be crazy.
New mall being built as we speak.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Sounds like you guys are really doing it this time.
Yeah. Really going after it. We're
scary.
Doing our best.
Yeah. Where can we go for more information?
You can go to, we have actually 2 pages. There's the Beloved Pickle Company building page, which is for the Pickle Factory. And then we also have Pickle Factory Productions and Events.
Which is more
Facebook,
on our scale of what we're doing.
The venue side of it.
Pickle Company building is more for references about the people that are there. You can email people about getting an artist studio there, although I believe they're completely full, so that probably wouldn't do you any good.
Got some spaces coming along.
Yeah.
Should be done in the first of the year.
So the Pickle Factory Productions will give you, if you just look us up on Facebook, we'll give you all the information for shows, just
how to book an event, how to get in on an event.
Yeah,
always looking for vendors, artists, everything.
You can also like personally contact Hillary or I on Facebook. She's just Hillary Barrett, and my name is Carr. My last name is Ma.
I hope I pronounced that correctly. M-A-N-G is not a usual name you come across here in America. It's German, right?
It is German, actually. People think I'm Asian until they meet me.
Like, definitely not Asian.
I know, but, you know.
You can also call us at 801-577-1093 or
801-554-7662.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today and giving the update on the exciting goings on there at the Pickle Factory.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It's great.
It's very nice to meet you.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Sound Waves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit them at slugmag.com. What are your favorite places in town to eat pizza? I like the pie. I'm also good go for a Vinto slice every once in a while, and there's no better than the pie hole late at night, but I'm interested in what you think is really good for our upcoming session with Yelp community wrangler Jeffrey Stedman. Drop us a line at soundwaves@slugmag.com. Let us know what pizza you like, and we'll make sure to feature it on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and JP. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown, and our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design is by T-Done, and our technical design is by Kate O'Connor. On next week's show, Jess Smart Smiley, Hive Theaters Who Are You, and Auntie.